Today is my first time introducing anybody, and I think it's a good time because it's probably the only eyewitness that we know of who's spoken out very strongly and have gone against a system that we all know of that has lied to us for many years and will do for many years unless we do something about it. This man was the last survivor of the World Trade Center damages. He was pulled from the rubble on 9/11, and he's the president of the 9/11 Hispanic Victims Group. He's been in various documentaries that we've all seen. So without further ado, let me introduce you to William Rodriguez.
Basically, I was named National Hero by Congress and by the government of Puerto Rico as well, because I was born in Puerto Rico, so they have like a little competition who makes Willie a hero first, which was ridiculous, because they just recognize you, they give you all these kind of accolades, but you don't eat with that, because if they really wanted to help me, they should have given me a job. And they didn't. I was chosen first by the government, by the Republican Party, to run for office because I became the voice of September 11th for the victims, survivors, and families of the victims of 9/11, and those affected. And they saw it as the opportunity to get to that Latino vote. They needed 30 million votes, and say, what better person than Rodriguez, who is so well loved by his community for the work that he's doing after what happened. They sent me to the Governing Institute, which is an institution that trained politicians on how to set up legislation, how do you set up a press conference, how do you deal with the media, basically everything that is politics. And I went and I got the training. I didn't have anything to lose. But when I started asking questions of what happened on that day, everything was totally different than I expected. The government didn't want me to ask those questions, even though I was the photo opportunity. If you look on Google, don't take my word for anything. Anything I tell you right now, just go and look it up for yourself. They used me as a photo opportunity. You will see pictures on the internet with Hillary Clinton, with the President of the United States. You will see me with the top congressman. They all wanted to have pictures, okay, because that's going to help whatever candidacy they have for targeted groups. And they needed the support of the families. And I was part of the game. I was part of the lie because I did not know what was going on. I thought that we were going to get answers, which we didn't. Once I get the recognition, I started asking for the formation of a commission to investigate the events. Six family members and I, we went to Congress. And we asked for a formal investigation. You may remember that the president said, we don't need an investigation. We know who did it. The Muslim did it. The Arab did it. Now, if you lose your brother, your sister, your mother, in any kind of event, you want to know what happened. You have the right, and you should execute that right. And we say, no, we don't want you to tell me what you want me to know. We want to investigate, we want the evidence. We want the truth. They didn't want that. So we went on national TV and we placed on every television program that we could a widow, a mother, a family member that lost somebody just to press for the investigation. They agreed to the investigation, a bipartisan investigation. Then we asked something simple. We want a family member to represent the family expectations. Somebody that will protect our interests. Is anything bad about that? You have the right to do that. They didn't want that. As a matter of fact, they never allowed it. They didn't want a family member as part of the 9/11 commission because their excuse was, number one, that he or she will have access to national security documents. Mind you, that in the family groups, we have people that were very well prepared, retired judges, lawyers, all kind of backgrounds that would have represented us and the family interest very well. They never allowed it. Also, they wanted to have Henry Kissinger to be the head of this commission. And that's what we went crazy. We said, no. You have a man that is considered a war criminal in many countries to be the head of this commission when we have an international support for what happened? We press and he removed himself. Which actually, we fire him. Now, they created the 9/11 commission, but with only an agreement that FEMA, the Department of Justice, the FBI, NORAD, Homeland Security didn't exist at that time, State Department, will be exempt of any prosecution. Okay, you will have it, but any of these organizations, any of these departments, and the CIA will not be prosecuted. Isn't that strange? Well, it was very strange for the families as well. And that's when we started, you know, it doesn't make sense. Something is wrong. We create the Family Steering Committee. A group of family members, the best prepared members that we have, simply to put the questions that we needed to be answered. From 168 questions that we placed, we only have answers to 22 of them. I am one of the last person to testify behind closed doors. They didn't want my testimony publicly, even though, oh, I was good for the news. I was the expert for Telemundo, the Spanish network, for Univision, for CNN, en Español. They have CNN in Spanish. They're expert on everything related to 9/11. But when it came to these questions, always edited, always cut it into pieces. The Anglo media didn't want these questions to be out. Sadly, and to our distress, we started to find out so many things. Because we have the access. We are there. We are through the whole process. We are going through the whole process of the investigation. And we realized that our own government was lying. My testimony was totally omitted from the final report. Omitted. Made 22 people available. They were never called. Not even one of them. And they came out with an official story that did not agree with what we went through on that horrible day. On 9/11, I came in at work at 8:30 in the morning. A miracle by itself, because I was supposed to be there at 8 o'clock every day. That day I came in late. I guess he had more plans for me. And I said that because every morning I will go straight to the top of the building where they have something called Windows of the World, a restaurant that was located on the last floor of the North Tower, and I will go over there and have breakfast. They gave me breakfast for free. And I will go and get it every day, and I will say, I have breakfast at Windows of the World. It was, you know, but it was a privilege, and at the same time, a benefit that I received for working at the World Trade Center. And the reason I have to go up is because I was the janitor of the stairwells. I will start working, cleaning up the stairs from the top to the bottom. But I came in late. And I went to the support office of my company, American Building Maintenance. Was located on the B1 level. The building has 6 up levels. Basement 1, basement 2, all the way down to basement 6. I was on basement 1. On that B1 level, I'm talking to a supervisor called Anthony Saltalamacchia. And while I was talking to him, at 8:46, we hear, boom! An explosion so hard that pushed me upwards. And everybody around me pushed me upwards. An indication that something just blew up on the basement below me. I felt it. I heard it. And at that very moment, I said to myself, not verbally, a generator just probably blew up on the mechanical room. Because on the B2 level, between the B2 and the B3 level, they have the generators for the building, the pumps, everything that was mechanical to support the structure. So it made sense. And mind you, I worked in the building for 20 years. So I know the difference of something that came from the side, from the bottom, and from the top. Very different. And when I went to verbalize it, that's when I hear for the first time, bah! All the way on the top of the building. And that was the impact of the plane. Two different events. An initial explosion on the basement. Now, we hear that, and all of a sudden, a man comes running on the corridor to the office saying, explosion, explosion, explosion. His hands extended. And all the skin from under his armpits pulled out on both arms. Hanging on both arms like this from the top of the fingertips. Imagine you take off a glove and you let it hang you. And I thought at that time that that was the clothing. And when I realized it, it was his skin. And I said, what happened? And for the first time when I say what happened, I look at his face. And I noticed he had missing parts of his face. A black man called Felipe David, Felipe David, from Honduras, who I did not know. He was on the B2 level, below me, when this huge explosion happened, and he tried to cover his face because of the ball of fire. And that's how he got burned. Everybody saw this man, they horrified. They started screaming. And then we hear another explosion. And the building started to shake. And the false ceiling falls right on top of us. The sprinkler system got activated. The walls cracked. And everybody screaming. And at that moment, I thought very easily that it was a bomb. But at the same time, people felt the floor moving below them, and they thought it was an earthquake. So they all going into the frame of the door to try to cover it. 15 people. I say to Mr. Felipe David, don't move, because I was going to call the emergency services that was located on the South Tower. And when I went to pick up the phone, another explosion. And that's when I sent everybody out. I have to leave everybody outside the office to the loading dock, from the loading dock all the way outside the building, a hill. And when I get outside, all I hear is an ambulance. I stop the ambulance and put Mr. Felipe David, who I had on my shoulder, inside the ambulance. And he goes into a coma. And that's when I hear for the first time, a plane hit the building, a plane hit the building. So I turn around and I look up and I saw the hole, I saw the fire, I saw the smoke. I never thought it was a commercial plane. I thought it was probably a helicopter. And at that moment, I realized that because of the angle of vision that I was standing at, you couldn't see the top of the building, the antenna. And I said, oh my God, the people from Windows, my friends. And I started screaming, we gotta go back, we gotta go back, we gotta go back. Nobody wanted to go back. Nobody wanted to go back. Even my supervisor, a guy three times my size, weightlifter, all of a sudden, Rodriguez, you stay here, you're not going back in. He said, you're crazy, those are workers there. I say, no, you're not going back in. I took the radio from the security guard that was standing right next to me and said, I'm sorry, I'm going in. And I ran inside the building again, through the hill, all the way inside. And I went straight to the South Tower. The South Tower, after the bombing of 1993, on the basement, they created something called the OCC, the Operation Control Center, which was simply a control room with cameras, with emergency equipment. And I wanted to let them know that I had a person that was injured outside. And I started hitting the window. And there was nobody there. It was empty. I found one guy called Jimmy Barrett, who was on the basement, but of the South Tower, not the tower that was hit. The other tower. And he said, what's going on? And I told him, they said a plane hit the building, but I'm hearing explosions. He didn't know anything about it. That gives you an indication how many people died on the basement of the South Tower without ever knowing what was going on. At that moment, I turn to the right and I see a lady who is standing in a podium like this at the entrance door for the employees for the Marriott Hotel. And I said, what are you doing there? And she said, I heard everything. Listen to this. I heard everything. But I'm afraid to leave. I say, why? Because I'm a new employee and I don't want to get fired. Do you imagine that? The ignorance? You imagine? And I say, no, you got to get out now. Pushed it out, went straight to the North Tower. I found only one guy. There was water everywhere. Remember, the sprinkler system was on. There was water everywhere. And at that very moment, I hear the guy say, I hear screams. But you couldn't hear very well because of the swooshing sound, of the water. And I said, but, you know, what kind of sound? I mean, screams. And I put my ear in one of the freight elevators. and effectively the building had 150 elevators. And when I put the key on that elevator, there were two people stuck, screaming for help because they were going to drown. Drown. Now think about it. The plane hit all the way on the top, but the sprinkler system get activated all the way on the bottom. Does that make sense? The official report says that when the plane hit the top, listen to this, when the plane hit the top, the ball of fire went down the central core, the central elevator shaft, all the way to the basement, and it expanded. Now, how strange is that? Because the elevator operator of the 58 car, the lift, that was the middle lift, he's alive. He should have been burned to a crisp. When the plane went in, the elevator fell down 5 floors down below. He broke both ankles. But he's alive. I interviewed him. Made him available to the commission. Didn't make sense. Now, at that very moment, and this is the incredible part, I was not a religious person. I was a total agnostic. And I said, God, please help me. And I said it with such a need, because I did not know what to do. Honestly, I did not know what to do. What am I going to do? There's two people stuck inside an elevator, drowning. And you know why they were drowning? Because I found out later, they went into the elevator because this ball of fire was coming everywhere, that to protect themselves, they went inside the elevator, the door closed out, and they started going down, and they lost energy. There was no power. And they got encapsulated between floors, and all the water started going down the elevator shaft. And they have the water up to here. So when I said, God, please help me, I looked around, and I found a metal pipe in an area that was supposed to be clean of construction debris. It was there to save them. Those people had to be saved. I took that pipe, and with the help of the other guy, we opened the door. When we opened the door, there was nothing because the elevator was all the way inside. And when I looked down, I said again, God, please help me. Please. What do I do? And it was just like a flash. I remember at that very moment that in the area where they have the trash compactors for the building, the electricians always have ladders that they tied up with chains, so nobody will steal them. It was on the loading dock. And I said, let me find one. Please, let me find one. And I ran there. And the only one that I found that was not chained, only one, was the longest one of all of them. I took that ladder and I just put an aluminum ladder, long one, put it on my shoulder, went, dropped it inside the elevator, went inside, opened the roof of the elevator, the top lid, got these two people out, Salvatore Giambanco, I remember his name, a painter for the Port Authority. I did not know him. And a delivery guy. Got them both out, took them outside with the help of the other two guys that were upstairs. Took them outside, put them in an ambulance. And again, by myself, right again, inside the building. And everybody, don't go in, don't go in. But I needed to get to my friends. I needed to get to the top. And when I get again through the basement, the only person that I find at that very moment was police officer David Lynn. I'm sorry I don't have the slides, but you can see the pictures of all these people alive. And David Lynn, a Port Authority officer, says, William, do you have the key? And I said, yes. He meant if I had a master key. There were 5 master keys in the complex. Think about it. 16 acres of real estate. Only 5 master keys. The people with the other 4 were trained on egress, escape, first aid, rescue. Port authority, management, employees. They were the first one to run out. They ran out of the building when that happened. And I was just a janitor. And the reason I had that key was because in 1996, I fell down the stairwell while mopping the floors. And they couldn't find me for several hours. So I did an employee dispute against the Port Authority just to have some kind of key in case of an emergency. And they lost, and I won. And that's how I got the key. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the key. They call it the key of hope. It's already designated to be on the memorial that is going to be built on Ground Zero. But without this key, so many people would have died. And without the help of God. At that moment, I said, let's go. We started going up the stairwells. We get to the lobby. When we get to the lobby, the fire department were there. They're waiting for the freight elevator, the 58 car that I was telling you that the guy got both ankles broken. I said, there's no elevator. Follow me. I know the best way to go up. So these people, poor firemen, they have so much equipment on their backs. We're talking about between 70 to 150 pounds of equipment. We started going up the stairwell. It was so hard, so difficult, because people kept bumping against us, coming down. Now, the reason the key again was very important was because the World Trade Center was a Class A building. Any building over 50 floors and above need a codification called Class A, meaning that 3 doors will not open on the stairwells, and 1 will open. 3 won't open, 1 will open, all the way to the top. In 1993, when the bomb happened in 1993, so much time was lost by the fire department just breaking each door. Steel doors. I went in front of them, opening the doors and letting people out. I have no equipment in my bag. And I did the stairwells every day. I was in a better physical condition than them at that time. Not now. At that time. So I went, I found myself sometimes several floors above them, opening doors and letting people escape. Now, as I went up, I heard so many strange things, but especially mini explosions. And I said to the firemen, what is that? And you know what they said? It must be the gas tanks from the kitchens. Mind you, that the World Trade Center, again, was a Class A building. All the kitchens were electrical. So that did not make sense. One person comes down and said, we had a person on a wheelchair with an asthma attack on the 27th floor. And they said, we're going to make it there. The fire department. And we started going up. We make it to the 27th floor and they all collapse. I'm talking about the firemen. They all collapse on the corridor because they couldn't continue going up. Physically, it was impossible for them. The equipment. Just imagine the steps. Anyway, I said,
can you make the sound of the explosions? Can you imitate it for us, please?
Imitate the explosions?
There you go.
No. Those were sporadical. Not that yet. No. That's coming later. That's coming.
There you go. Boom, boom.
Boom, boom, but different. It wasn't one after the other. It was sporadic. Yes. And but let me finish, and I'll tell you the details, so you can put everything together. We make it to the 27th floor. These people collapsed. They couldn't continue. And at that very moment, somebody said, "We need water." So the police officer said, "Will, do you know this floor?" I said, "Yes, on the south side, you have vending machines. You can get water from there." "Okay, fine." We go over there. The guy breaks the machine. You know, the glass, breaks it, and we start taking water in trash cans and distributing them to the people. I called my mother in Puerto Rico to let her know that there was an accident at the World Trade Center in case she hears something on the news. Little did I know that the world knew what was happening, but we didn't. She starts screaming, "What are you doing there? There's fire in the building. Get out." And in my ignorance, I said, "Mother, they don't know what they're doing," talking about the fire. "And I have the master key, so I'm taking them through the maze of the stairwell so they know how to get to the top." But, and I lied. I said, "Do not worry, I'm not getting to the top." And I was lying. Because my mission was to get to the top of the building to help my friends of Windows of the World. And sadly to say, I never made it to the top. I lost 67 friends of Windows of the World. I lost friends that shared so much with me. In total, I lost 200 people on that horrible day. So I never made it to the top, and I lied to my mother, and I continue going up, and I get to the 33rd floor. On the 33rd floor, by myself, because these people couldn't continue. On the 33rd floor, when I go inside, I only find one person trembling on the floor in a fetal position. Her name? Don't know. I said, "What are you doing here?" I remember she had no shoes on. I said, "I don't know where the exits are." Mind you, that a building so tall did not have a mandatory training on egress. Just imagine, 50,000 workers at the complex. The amount of turnaround of people getting fired, getting hired, retiring was constant. So it should have been at least a requirement that if you go to work at the building, know what the exits were. She didn't know. There were only three stairwells in the complex, A, B, and C. And I said, "No, you gotta get out." I stood her up, put her on the stairwell. There were some people coming from the cafeteria on the 44th floor. And I said, "Take her out, please." And at that very moment, when she goes out with them, I go back into the area. And the reason that 33 was important to me was because in there, I had a closet with all the supplies for cleaning the building. So I'm going to the closet, and all of a sudden I hear, boom. So it's not explosion. It's something being moved, heavy equipment being moved on the 34th floor. It was crashing the floor. Now, why is that strange? The 34th floor was an empty floor. A hollowed out floor by construction. And nobody was there. So to hear that, it was the first time that I felt fear through the whole process, because the adrenaline was pumping so hard, because I just wanted to get the most amount of people out in the least amount of time. And for me to hear that scared me, because I knew that was impossible, that somebody was doing that in there. You needed access for that. And the only way to get in was through the stairwell, because not even the elevator could stop it. And why do I know that? Because it was the floor above my closet, and I would go and have lunch on that floor because it was empty and nobody would bother me. So to hear that scared me so much that it was the only floor that I bypassed through the whole ordeal. I continue going up until the moment that I get to the 39th floor. When I get to the 39th floor, from the other stairwell, from the A stairwell, David Lynn comes over with two firemen chief to talk about what was going to be the next step. And while we are talking, all of a sudden we hear, boom! The impact on the other tower. And it was so hard that our tower shake, and all of a sudden we hear, pa 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 pa. Horrible, strong. And on the radio of the security guard that I have on my hand, I hear, we lost 65, we lost 65. Meaning the 65th floor collapsed floor by floor by floor by floor up to the sky lobby, the 44th floor. And I was on the 39th floor, five flights away. And I started screaming, we gotta go up, we gotta go up. And the police officer said, no, Willie, you've done enough. But you don't get paid for this. And I said, what? What are you saying? That doesn't make any sense. I said, I'm going up. I don't care, I'm going up. He said, no. And that's when he said, you're still a civilian, but you don't get paid for this. Better if you give me a hand with the person on the wheelchair and get out. So you know what? I'm not giving the key to anybody. And I committed the same mistake of the lady on the podium. Because I don't want to get fired. Imagine this key. You don't need a plane. You don't need anything. Because you will have access to the whole complex. And I knew that, you know, if I lost the key, I would be out of a job. Mind you, that, again, the ignorance that the world was watching, but we didn't know what was happening. The radios were failing for the fire department. Motorola. We sued Motorola. We got $3 million, not us, allotted for the company to come out with a new type of radios so they could communicate just to avoid the same tragedy that happened on 9/11. They got it. Guess what? The radios failed again. So, yes, at that moment, I said, you know, I'm going to go down. I'm going to help the guy on the wheelchair and coming back up. I ran down to the 27th floor. I told the firemen, I have orders to get this man out right now. And these two firemen stood up, said, we'll help you. And then another guy comes over and said, we have the guy on the wheelchair already on a rescue basket. They put him on a rescue basket. And we started going down the stairwell. As we go down the stairwell, we hear. The collapse of the South Tower. Very loud. So strong that the building oscillated again, and the fluorescent lights on the stairwell, they started to break in at once, blah, 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 all the way to the bottom. And it was like a scene from the Towering Inferno. You could see through the holes, you could hear the people screaming. And we made it to the lobby. When I made it to the lobby with this fireman, one of the firemen looks at me and says, get the ambulance ready. But I was in shock because I'm looking at that. How many people were ever at the World Trade Center? Several. Do you remember that beautiful marble walls on the lobby? Was totally pulled out. There was no marble anywhere. You could only see the cement patches where the marble was actually stuck to. Because the other building collapsed and it made such a strong force that the oxidation itself made the marble break into pieces. And I saw it on the floor. I looking at the walls, And I started like a zombie going towards the entrance to get the ambulance ready. I see the destruction to my left-hand side because of the collapse of the South Tower. And when I go to the front of the building, these are the revolving doors over here. These are the revolving doors. There's not a glass intact, everything into pieces. When I get to the front, right here, this is the revolving door. Where this gentleman is sitting, is a fire truck. I hear, "Don't look back, don't look back." And when they tell you, "Don't look back," what do you do? Yes, it was the police. They had the area cordoned out 2 blocks across the street. And they're screaming at me not to look back. When I turn around to see what they were talking about, I found all the bodies of the people that jumped out of the building. And it's like they melted on the floor because of the impact. Now, this is, I've done this, I spoke about this so many times, and it always hurt me, this part, because you see, I'm telling you this, and it's emotionally relieving, second by second, what I went through. But the worst part is when I looked around, and that lady that I helped to escape from the 33rd floor, I found her cut in half. Because one of the glass from the top of the building apparently came down with such a force that, like a guillotine, cut her in half. And I started screaming, "God, what is this? What is this?" And seconds, I see the whole, the destruction of the Marriott Hotel. And I see the body. I say, "What is this?" It's like she never had a chance. And all of a sudden I hear, "Run, run, run." And I see across the street everybody running. I look around me. There's nobody around me. There's nobody behind me. And the only thing I see is a fire truck. And I start running towards the fire truck. I slip right under the fire truck. And the building started to collapse right on top of me. And the only thing I said at that moment, "Please God, don't give my mother." The only thing I thought was about my mother. "Don't give my mother the pain to see my body in parts. Let her recognize my body." Because I didn't want her to see what I just saw. I wanted her to recognize me. And the building finally collapsed completely. And all of a sudden, the swooshing sound again. And it's that dust. Remember that huge cloud of dust, everybody running away from it? Comes from every under the truck, from every other orifice. And it burns me. Burns me, why? Because it was hot. And it was powerful. I mean, it was like a vacuum cleaner the other way. Just hits you everywhere. And it burned my eyes, burn me on, I still have the mark over here. And at that moment, I figured, "Oh my God, I am going to really, really have a slow death because I am trapped under the building. I'm going to die." So I started to pray. Again, I was a non-believer. I didn't believe in anything. And the only thing I asked for wasn't any time. I didn't ask anything for myself. It was always for my mother. So my mother could handle my death. To have strength. And I stayed there. Luckily, from across the street, CNN and Global Vision from Brazil, two television stations that were actually documenting in the area what was happening, they came out and they said, "The last man out was from that area." And they started a rescue effort in the area where actually I was trapped. Several hours after, I hear stuff moving around. But I feel that I'm dying of asphyxia because I couldn't breathe anymore. And again, it's like I was protected for a mission. I was protected for something. All of a sudden I feel a hand pulling me through the back of my shirt, and I see the fluorescent bands of the jacket, and I knew it was a fireman. Say, "Are you okay?" And I say, "No, I lost my legs because I could not feel my legs. It's because I went so many stairwells and I went outside the building so many times saving people that I lost the sense of from my knees down. They were trembling, my legs were trembling." And all of a sudden, the only thing I see, because that cloud of dust did not disperse for hours. Stay there for hours. And I see a light, a flashlight, and a guy screaming, "This way, this way." So I walked towards the light, and I saw the word "ambulance" backwards. I went in, got first aid, oxygen, for 15 minutes. This is at the epicenter of Ground Zero. And when I recovered, I ran back to the area where the truck was, the fire truck. Now, again, another miracle, because the tires of the truck did not blow up until the moment that they pulled me out. I started looking on the search with the group that was doing the search in the area. And I found two boots. I pulled the boots and I realized the legs of the families were inside the boots. And I started screaming again, "Help! Help! Help!" Everybody started running towards me. And they tried. The guy was still alive. And the moment that they pulled him out, he exhaled. Stayed there the whole day until the moment that I realized my family, they probably dying, thinking that something happened to me. And guess what? The first thing that I did was I saw CNN calling me, "This way, this way." So I went to the area for CNN, NBC, and Global Vision, and they said, "What happened?" And I told them the whole story, because I figured that somebody will see me and let my family know. And that's exactly what happened. Somebody called my mother and let her know, because imagine now, the other theater, my mother finished talking to me, my son is there, she's watching TV, hangs up the phone, and all of a sudden she sees the other plane going in. What a shock. And all of a sudden she said, "I hope he comes down, that he's all right," and all of a sudden the building collapsed. "I hope he's in the other building," and then the other building collapsed. She fainted, she had a small heart attack. But somebody told me that I was okay. Now, the moment that I'm taken out of the area is when Building 7 collapses. I'm on a boat to the area of New Jersey because I couldn't get out from the area. The area of New Jersey is right in the area of the World Trade Center. There's the river over there. They have to take me out on the boat. I look up and I see Building 7 collapse. A building that was never hit by a plane. Never. But a small fire, and it collapsed in the same way as the South Tower and as the North Tower. Now, this goes against the official story. The whole experience. And that's why I said I made 22 firemen available. Those 15 people survived. I did not know Felipe David. He saw me on TV fighting after 9/11. I became an activist right away because nobody was giving help to the community. You heard about the Red Cross raising millions of dollars That was not getting to the victims. So I made a national press conference, and the guy comes out from a coma 13 weeks after, comes out of a coma, and in the hospital watching the TV, he said, "That's the guy that saved me." Called the hospital doctor and said, "This is the guy that saved me." They called NBC, they make this big televised reunion, and guess what? Never met the guy before. They interview him and said exactly the same thing, word by word, of what went through on that basement that day. Now, why do we do this? Because we owe the truth to the world. They have used 9/11 to criminalize Islam. They have used 9/11 to create a new agenda. I'm not a Muslim, but it's my responsibility to show the world that it's bad, wrong, what our government has been using 9/11 for, to create a war against the Muslim community. We owe it to the truth. We owe it to the memory of these victims. My friends, I was never able. I was able to save hundreds of people. But the people that I really wanted to get to, I never got to. I was unable to do that. Now I have access, as leader of the victims, to the top intelligence experts in the nation. I had an interview with a former FBI director. FBI director for the Western region of the United States, a man with 300 agents under his command, a budget of $2 billion. And he's the first one who told me the whole 9/11 was a government-sponsored terrorism. It was created by us. Created by us. He said, I was the one that put the $100 million arms package for Osama Bin Laden. I have it on video. I am the one who had that meeting with Osama, and he showed up in military compounds in and out in the last 10 years. We created Osama Bin Laden. We created Al-Qaeda. We created the whole illusion. We are using 9/11 to create a new world agenda. Why? Think about it. Who profits from this? Small group. The coalition of the killing, willing. Is basically chopping up the world between themselves. The industrial military complex, Halliburton, General Electric, Boeing, Northrop, all these companies who are the biggest weapon makers and suppliers for the military are the ones making the dough. Why? We had a fear before. What was the fear? The Soviet Union. We were afraid of the Soviet Union. They controlled us because of the Soviet Union. But they became our friends. There's an old Hindu proverb that says, if God don't have the devil, he will be out of the job. They needed to create a new fear. They needed to create a new fear. How do you validate billions of dollars yearly? Billions of dollars yearly on a military that is doing nothing. How do you validate millions of dollars on weapons that are not being sold? Jets that are not being bought by other countries. You have to validate it by something. What better thing than the war on terrorism? Now, the war on terrorism is a war without jurisdiction. Because the same way they finish in Iraq, they're going to go to Iran. They're going to go to North Korea. They're going to go to the Philippines. They're going to go to Colombia. They can define war on terrorism on whatever they want. They bypass United Nations resolution of your right to defend your country. If I invade your country, you have the right to defend it with your life. No, then you're a terrorist. So who profits from this? Halliburton, again. A company that only made meals for the soldiers. Meals. Get a $16 billion no-bid contract, which is illegal in the United States. Illegal. To run prisons in a foreign country. Then gets $60 billion no-bid contract to create concentration camps in the United States. Then they get $23 billion to create their reconstruction contract company that is going to reconstruct Iraq. Dick Cheney was the president of that Halliburton. So we have seen how they use our tragedy to create an agenda that we did not agree on in the very early beginning. And you don't remember, maybe, but when they started the conflict with Iraq, they wanted the families of 9/11 to support the invasion because they said that it was a connection between Saddam and Osama, and they were bought into the 9/11 fiasco. They said that. But when the family stood up and they said, no, it doesn't have to do at all with 9/11, they changed the tune to weapons of mass destruction. And they created the whole theory. And they succeeded. They succeeded. So I beg you to investigate and learn, because there's so much information. You know the story. There were no Arabs on the flying list. If these people were Muslims and they are going to commit martyrdom, they wouldn't have gone to a topless bar the night before. They wouldn't have drank the night before because they are sacrificing themselves for Allah. They are going to do the right thing for themselves. And that's exactly the opposite of what happened. So I beg you to inquire and support the families of 9/11, support your local 9/11 United Kingdom group. Have Annie Marchand in the back. Annie, would you please stand up? Who has been gracious enough to hold this and every. Just please stand up, please. You're my speaker presented.
It's an embarrassing way.
Because we owe this to the victims and we owe this to the world. Again, they have used this to eliminate all the civil rights in the United States. We have no rights, basically, right now. They created the Patriot Act. They created the so many legislations. I mean, Patriot Act. We have the Homeland Security Act. We have the right to detain you without the right to a lawyer indefinitely. The habeas corpus, which is your constitutional rights to defend yourself and to voice whatever grievances you have in a public matter is gone. The president right now can hold you against your will and declare you an enemy combatant. Now, national hero, I'm on the no-fly list. The problem is that they don't attack me directly. They have called everybody conspiracy theorists. But they don't dare to call me that for the simple reason that I am an eyewitness. I was there. I experienced. I vividly remember every single detail. I testify for the commission. I organized the families. I gave them constantly witnesses. My testimony can and is being used in court to prosecute. A conspiracy theory will only speculate. So please support us. I do this all over the world. I don't get a salary. This is the same suit that you will see me with the last 3 years. We do it through donations. The families. And now the problem that 5 years after we are dying. And when I say we are dying, it's because the people are affected because of the environmental damage of what happened after the collapse of the tower. And they knew about it. You know it. You read it on the news. The Environmental Protection Agency, who has a jurisdiction in the area, knew that it was the highest carcinogen levels ever recorded. PCBs, mercury, even radiation. And they lied to the rescuers because they just wanted the area clean up to open Wall Street. We have the memo. We sue under the Freedom of Information Act. And we have the memos from the EPA. So you see, this is a mission. For me, it's a mission of truth. And a form to glorify that second opportunity of being alive. Just asking for the right things. Do the same, because if not, you're going to have your own 9/11. You have your 7/7. You have your 7/7. Another event is going to happen. We don't know when. But it's going to happen. It's going to be bigger. And again, they're going to blame the Muslims. They have to finish the agenda. So please, again, God bless you all. Thank you for being here. And show your support.